right, and welcome to another episode of Two Guys, One Level, a place where two guys talk about all things gaming. I'm your host, Tortuga, accompanied by Pixel.
Welcome back to another episode, everyone. Thanks so much for joining us.
Absolutely. So, we joked about it that this podcast is going to transition over to cover all things Baldur's Gate, but I feel like that started off as a joke and is quickly becoming a reality. Going to start an opening by discussing the release date for Baldur's Gate. So I don't know if you saw, but they're going to do kind of like a global release. So it's going to release at the same time globally, and depending on your respective time zone, will determine what hour that game will release for you. So it's crossed between August 3rd and August 4th at midnight Tokyo time. Once it strikes to August 4th, the game will release worldwide. Strange hour for them to choose, but that's where what they're going with. So for the States, that means 8 a.m. if you're on the West Coast, California side. And 3 hours after that is what, 11? For you, everyone for on California? The East Coast.
Or wait, we're going the other way. Okay.
Yeah, 8 a.m. West Coast, 11 a.m. East Coast.
Hey, okay.
So that's the... the plan for Baldur's Gate. Again, not really sure why. It falls for the respective studio around 5 p.m. So I'm assuming the plan was everyone gets off work that Friday and the game is released. I would have thought they would have wanted it to release their morning and give the devs the day off to enjoy their time. But, you know, that's just me. But nevertheless, that is the plan for Baldur's Gate 3. Yeah, I'm excited for it. It's good to know now around the hour that Steam is going to crash on me while I try to get this game downloaded. Hopefully they do that pre-download thing that they do sometimes.
Yeah, I hope there's an earlier update before the release as well so I can set that up. I'm assuming it's just going to be an update to the early access game that's out now. I don't see why they would do a whole nother install, you know?
Well, as you know, we switched over to Steam recently. And I've noticed since I've switched over to Steam, there's been a hot patch applied and it did not do that. So I'm wondering if it's going to be the same thing. It's going to be a large game. I can't remember off the top of my head how large the actual game is going to be, but it's in the triple digits gigabytes. I think maybe 125, 150 range. And currently the base game or for the early release is around 65. So we're looking at double/triple of an upgrade. So I'm wondering if maybe it's just cleaner to do a full install for the entire game itself. And they'll just treat the early access as just a separate entity altogether. Curious to see how that's going to play out.
No, I hear you. Especially considering it's something minor. If you look at it from an update perspective, but when you incorporate it with gameplay, we are talking about just on this portion, pretty massive. So as of right now, there are about 400 unknown spells in the game. The game currently has about, you know, in the early access version, I think I saw something like 120, 130 known spells. The last community update thing that they did, I think it was like number 20, where they added, they kind of put some pictures out with some classes, subclasses, a couple spells that they added. So there's who knows how many spells we're going to end up in this game. Baldur's Gate 2 apparently had 275 spells. And then after all the expansions, it brought it up to 300. So for the fact that there's 400 unknown spells currently is pretty wild.
I'm very curious as to how they're making that determination, because I don't think there are 400 spells in D&D. I'm wondering if they're counting it multiple times if classes share access to a spell. So if a class has access to, say, the Firebolt cantrip, if they're counting it three or four different times because four classes can cast that level spell. 400 seems high. So I'm wondering if maybe they just took creative license or creative freedom with the license and just decided to just create their own thing.
It's possible.
Or they're also counting the the abilities that you get. It's not really game spoilery, but you know, if you remember, your character starts developing psionic abilities and just extended abilities depending on your class, because of the transformation that you're currently going through in the beginning of, at least in the demo, that's what's happening. So with that, yeah, I guess that could also definitely increase the numbers quite a bit. So I'd be curious to see how they're coming to the conclusion of 400 total spells, because that's a large number.
Well, coming direct from Larian, they actually said that the game will include 600 player spells and sub spells. So maybe I don't know how that's going to look at it. Like, are they looking at it, like you mentioned, the same spell among various classes? Or what about the same one? Are they counting Witchbolt 1, Witchbolt level 2, you know?
That's a fair point. If they're also counting upclassing as an individual type of spell. Yeah, that's a valid point. That's curious.
Yep, that's just where we are right now with the game. It's excited to jump back in.
I'm gonna eat my words real quick. I had to Google it because I was curious. I just did a quick search of how many spells, D&D spells, are there currently in D&D 5e, and just a quick check says there are currently, and this is as of 2022, there are currently 477 spells split between three of the main Dungeons and Dragons books. So that's not even including the spells that are that come with some of the other extended, not revisions, but you know, they like add some unique spells depending on the type of gameplay. So yeah, let me eat my words real quick. There are already over 400 spells, and Larian Studios is probably just incorporating all of them. Well, not all of them, because we're only allowed to go up to 12th level. So what does that get you? I think level 6 spells, level 7, 7th level? I don't know. But very curious. There are a crap ton more spells than I thought there were, and I was just used to seeing the same 12. So never mind.
Okay. Well, I mean, they clearly are putting in love in the game. So it definitely holds true that they're going to try to match the player handbook as closely as they can without putting in those dice rolls, if you will, you know, the real minute details, because it is a digital video game, you know, first and foremost. But overall, this is very, very quickly turning into two guys, one dungeon, because it is... We're just so excited for the game. It's really difficult to put into words. You know, being unfortunately full grown adults, where we have to manage our time so much more. I've put off like almost all of my games for just saving it up for Baldur's Gate.
Yeah, I can definitely agree with you there. It's been such a long time since we had a game that hyped us up. Honestly, I guess not that long. Cyberpunk wasn't that long ago. And I was incredibly hyped for that game. And we all know the train wreck that came along with that. But Larian Studios is showing us the other side of that spectrum of, you know, how a studio should operate. And, you know, I feel like they actually respected the game instead of their investors by trying to rush out an unfinished product, because time and time again, Larian Studios, very transparent throughout the entire process. They held monthly, if not quarterly, updates. You were able to ask them questions directly in a lot of AMAs. They would show up on Twitch repeatedly with content, and they were constantly just given updates with where they were in the entire process. And they were trying to be as realistic as possible of hitting these deadlines. We know that COVID slowed things down a lot. Larian Studios is no exceptions to this. And you know, this game started development before COVID-19, shut everything down globally. And here we are on the other side of it, and Larian Studios is still holding strong, right? So I don't know. I just feel like they have rejuvenated my hope for the gaming industry.
Yeah, there was a very major shift around a couple of years ago. I want to say probably the year before the COVID-19 pandemic, where there was a lot of faith being lost in these major publishers and developers of these AAA mm-hmm. games for a multitude of things. Essentially, they were releasing these broken games. People would play them, have terrible experience, essentially mm-hmm. turning the consumers into their very own beta testers, where they would just do either a day one patch or a hot fix within the following weeks of release. Yeah. Microtransactions, the biggest culprit that I can think of right now is actually Activision with Crash Team Racing, where they sent out the review copies that got glowing reviews. It was a great game for what it was. But they released technically an unfinished copy, because about a month after the game release, they ended up adding microtransactions that weren't included in the review copies.
Wow. That's shady. And it's like you said, so many things have led up to the point where people were just losing faith in the gaming industry and the gaming experience as a whole, right? We already face a challenge in that space where originality is rare. And it's not, I feel like there's no real blame there. It's just, it's hard to come up with brand new ideas. And not only brand new ideas, but good brand new ideas. And exploring things that already exist and maybe just trying to change how it's played or received seems to be the way to go. Best thing that comes to mind is what happened with Hogwarts Legacy, right? That IP isn't new. That IP is probably old enough to have grandchildren, I think. It's one of those things where it didn't exist in the gaming space at the level that Hogwarts Legacy did it. We had the Lego version, we had a PlayStation version, but it did not get the amount of love and attention to detail as Hogwarts Legacy. And that's, you know, that's the type of attention that we're being drawn to now, because it's been missing for so long. And then a game like Hogwarts Legacy and Baldur's Gate, it just draws so many people in just because of how much love and attention to detail these developers are putting into the game, because it's been missing for so long in the gaming industry.
Right. And that's why we saw such a massive boom of indie games getting so much love.
Yeah.
What was that
Fall Guys? Remember Fall Guys?
Fall Guys blew up. It was kind of like a physics-based semi-Mario Party kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Insane. And it's still getting glorious reviews. Look at Stray. That was a AA studio, the cat game. Like, the gameplay mm-hmm. ultimately wasn't for me. But even so, look how beautiful that game was.
Among Us is another, like,
Among Us,
Valheim. And that blew up. Valheim, yeah.
Originally, and I know this is a much older game now, but Castle Crashers went through the same thing. It was from the dudes from Newgrounds, and they made like an official game, and that blew up like crazy. There's this game called Intruder, that's kind of like, what's the best way to kind of explain it? Kind of like Counter-Strike. But that's a double A game that has a lot of love behind it. There's, what was that other one? Oh, it's on the tip of my tongue, and now it's going to annoy me that I don't remember it. Ori and the Blind Forest. The second one got, a lot more funding from Microsoft, but the first one was relatively small, right? And it just, luckily enough, was able to get the backing to have Microsoft publish it, but that was also a very small team. So it's like the Hollow Knight. Hollow Knight's another one, is kind of like a Castlevania, a Metroidvania, that where they're still waiting for a sequel of how amazing it was. And that game gave amazing critical acclaim for how smooth it was and the story itself and the gameplay on top of it. So this decline of AAA games, honestly, boils down to corporate greed more than anything else.
100%.
That's why we got the yearly releases of Call of Duty, of Assassin's Creed, of
FIFA, anything EA touches, 2K. What Forza number are we up to at this point? I can't imagine that going around in the circle has changed in the last 50 years. So it's just like
a left turn.
I don't understand how they're releasing a new anything. What's really gets is the exact same not stadiums, racetracks. It's crazy to me. I get that I'm sure a new model of some kind has come out. That's easily a DLC. That's easily a hot patch, not an entire new game. It's the exact same gripe that I have with FIFA and 2K. It's just the roster change. Yep, here's that's going to be $70. Like what? It's just
if anything, to give them, and I don't want to do this, but to give them the benefit of the doubt, it should just be maybe every 5 years, where if there's a major upgrade to their engine,
If there's a major upgrade to the engine or the language that they use to write the game, or you know something changed within the process of pushing out the game, then I you know, because you're restarting at that point and you're shifting a lot of focus into the new whatever system, right? Then it would make sense to charge because it's a whole new game. It's actually a different game at that point. I will never forget that time when FIFA 2020 came out. And in the stands, the sign still said FIFA 2019. So you will never convince me that they're not just copy and pasting the game and just updating the number on the cover. Because that is 100% what they're doing.
Exactly. All right. There's no major change. And remember, I think as of 2018 or 2019 for their FIFA Ultimate Team, which is the largest part of the microtransaction in the FIFA games, they're bringing in just on the microtransactions about $1 billion a year.
So yeah, that's fantastic.
It's great for them. Now, if they would put it to use and
agree,
build the game, then I'm all for it. Like I honestly, my jaw dropped when I saw that Immortals of Avium is an EA single player game. That they actually funded it and it looks really good. Like they actually put some love into it. Same thing with Wild Hearts.
Hold on. I think that game looks ass. The trailer looked fantastic.
Right, but I mean, like, not that it doesn't look like it's going to be a fun game to play, but it looks good. Like they actually, you don't think it looks good?
I think it looks terrible. Like I said, the cinematics, top tier, amazing, great level of color use, and then just the energy put into you. You can tell they're spending way more on the team developing the cutscenes than they are developing the world. It's night and day. The way the game looks, the way the game felt in the little demo that they did, it looked terrible.
I don't know, man. About a month or two ago, they did a gameplay trailer, and I thought it looked really good.
That is the one that I'm referring to. I did not think it looked good. Maybe some objects look cool. The lights reflected correctly, but the game did not look good.
That is interesting. I mean, I'm thinking more of the shooting. Some of the larger NPCs look good, like kind of like the boss fight. And the environment itself, I think, looked pretty all right. I mean, it honestly looks like...
It's definitely all right. I'm not going to argue with you there. It's okay. Definitely all right. But it is not... I guess my biggest gripe is it is not at the standard at where it should be with the amount of money that was pushed into that game and who's backing the creation of that game. If this was some indie dev's first time in entering the space and they were able to come out with a product like that with a team of five or less people, 100% I'd be right there with you, you know, for such a great achievement. But for EA, I was expecting 100 times more from them. It's nowhere near the caliber that kind of game could be at.
You know what? I'll agree to partial that statement. So for having EA backing it, the funding should absolutely be there. But do you know how much they actually put into it to make that statement of it being very well funded?
How much have they put into the creation of that game so far? Right. No idea.
Right. So EA should absolutely be putting much more. But it actually reminds me of something that Matt Damon said on his interview with Hot Ones. You ever watch any of those?
Only when a funny meme comes out of it. I don't watch an interview of any kind ever.
Okay, that's valid. But Matt Damon had, you know, did one like a year or two ago. And, you know, he was asked by Sean, the host, you know, like, what's different between making a movie in the 90s and making it today? And he basically said that the type of movie he wants to make that he can't really make, because back then you were able to afford not making all your money in the theaters because you had the DVD sales mm-hmm. about 6 months later. So it's like a brand new opening. But nowadays, like if a movie cost, I don't know.
$100 million.
Right. Whatever. He basically had to put up those costs and then put additional like advertising costs. This is all out of like their own money. So before they, you know, he basically calculated, I think using $25 million, basically like after everything, the movie would have to make $100 million for him to break even. And like now it's such a larger gamble. And I can understand that with certain studios, but EA is not one of them. You will very rarely catch me giving EA praise for doing what they're supposed to do for the consumers anyway. Because if I was a shareholder, I'd be praising EA left and right, but I'm not.
Right. And that's always what's going to be the case with these major corporations. I think AVM started out great. When the first trailer came out, I was all for it. I'm like, this is new, you know, it's exciting because it's new. And honestly, when I watched it the first time, I didn't even know EA had a part in it. I don't even think the logo came up at all in the original trailer. It was just like, hey, this game is coming out, and I was all for it. And like I said, the trailer looks fantastic, and I was still excited for it. And then they did a little bit of some gameplay reveal on the Xbox showcase, and that's the first time that I looked at it, and I'm like, this looks like pre-op. This looks like what you take into the conference room when you pitch the idea for this game. It did not look like it was ready to play. And they were making it seem like they were ready to play. And the main protagonist, I forgot the actor's name, was trying to sell it to the audience. But I can see the look on his face that even he felt that this game was nowhere near ready to release. It was like when they interviewed the Game of Thrones cast for the final season, and the lady asked if they thought the final season, if the audience was going to like the final season, and everyone just gave a fake smile and said, yep, it's going to be great.
Bro, so it was not breathtaking.
No, there was no level of Reeves influence in this game. Now, mind you, if Reeves ends up playing a part in it, the game immediately goes to the top of the list. That's just how it works. I don't make the rules.
I don't blame you at all. Which is real pretty funny considering he's also going to have a part in that DLC that's set to close out the Cyberpunk 2077 gameplay loop, if you will. Yep. I don't think they're doing anything else for it.
I feel like they still, I know it's on the table, and they definitely have the opportunity to create the era of Johnny Silverhand. If it's just his time, you play the game the way we played it as V, but as Johnny Silverhands. I feel like that would sell all over again easily.
It would. I think the only thing that might deter people is that we would already know how it ends.
So I feel like
some people don't like that.
I feel like that shouldn't matter too much because you're going to be playing it for the journey, for his time and his problems and situations and the way that his decisions are going to be split during that time frame. And I just like the fact that it's not as futuristic, right? Because we're looking at, I forgot how far back it was, but you know, it's further back in the past. So the technology isn't going to be the same that we got in 2077. I don't know. I think it's a great space to explore. If they don't want to do an entire game, even just as a DLC, is more than enough.
Actually, really funny that you mentioned that, because it's actually 2023 is technically when he died.
Okay, so yeah, that's a good chunk, 50 plus years in between. So yeah, that's enough time for technology to advance 4, 5, 6 times over. So I don't know. It's like I said, Cyberpunk had a lot of potential. I'm sure now it plays great. If I installed it again and tried it again, I would enjoy it a lot more. But I just can't get that taste out of my mouth of how just deplorable the experience was in general. The game crashing every 30 minutes. The driving was horrible. The T poses, the glitches. The list goes on and on and on. It never stopped. And there was always something crazy going on that would just kill the gaming experience left and right. It's just horrible. But
that's definitely a shame, because the only thing that I will agree with you to this day is the driving is atrocious. But a lot of testers or advanced copies, it seems that they're building this DLC as not exactly an afterthought, but more like a reboot. Like, they want you to start the game from scratch before to continue into the DLC.
Sure.
And it's apparently a much more coherent story.
And I'll say, well, that's good, because I'll say one last thing. Another thing that I didn't really like about Cyberpunk 2077 was it really didn't feel like the choices mattered that much. I know there were like, 7 or 8 different endings or whatever, depending on your choices along the way. But mm-hmm. I just feel like my background didn't really play as much into things as I thought it was going to. I also thought that we would have more of an opportunity to either join in with the gangs or factions, what have you, kind of how it works in like Fallout, right? You join a faction that opposes the 1 or 2 or 3 other ones, and depending on how far you advance in that section also influences how other areas perceive you, right? And eventually you might become an enemy of I thought it was going to be that kind of back and forth and tug and pull within those just rivalry gangs. Like, they hated each other, but I felt like as the character that we played, we didn't get a chance to really be a part of any of that.
No, I will definitely agree. The emphasis that they put with the different gangs in the city and their particular district, like who were they? The Voodoo?
Sure, yeah, that was one of them.
Right. So you had that one mission with them where you plugged in and like that was it. Like I mm-hmm. like what? Like they're supposed to be so prominent, at least in my playthrough. I know there was a different avenue you could have taken with them, but in mine, that was like the only experience I had with them. The Tiger Claws, I think I like fought them once or something like that. And it was very, I was very whelmed with the games.
Out of all the games I've ever played, that was one of them. it's like the little things like that, because I definitely remember when they were advertising for this game, that was like one of the core things that was like a selling point for them, was how you were going to be a part of these gangs and like your decisions mattered. And influence, like that was one of their selling points, and I like that kind of level of agency for them to include in these games. I'm attracted to that kind of style of gameplay, right? That is one of the main reasons why we keep going back to Baldur's Gate 3, because that kind of agency exists. The people that you interact with and befriend will immediately change the outcome for another NPC further down the road that you didn't even know about just because of something you did with a previous interaction. Like, that level of detail is what I'm looking for. And it brings me to a final point, and then we can move on from Baldur's Gate 3. There are a lot of people currently on social media saying how excited they are for Baldur's Gate 3. But they are pleading to the public to not let Baldur's Gate 3 raise your bar for what you expect from future RPGs, because Baldur's Gate 3 and Larian Studios are taking things to a level that no one thought was achievable. And to expect for another team or another dev to be able to match that, it's going to be almost impossible.
Right, exactly. And it's because of how they're taking their time with it. And that's honestly what brought BioWare to the forefront of RPG games. Now, they have since fallen, unfortunately. But if you ask anyone about the first couple of Dragon Age games, the Mass Effect trilogy, it was all that where a decision you made in the first game, I can speak, you know, Mass Effect 2 from experience because I just played that last year, the year before. But a decision you would make in the first game literally affected something in the third game.
Yeah.
And, you know, because you were able to carry over that save file. So it's things like that that really make those games so nuanced and so personal, where you want to do a second, third playthrough. A couple years go by, you want to pick it up and go through it all over again.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, Mass Effect is another one that raised the bar quite a bit. And even with a game that old, so many titles have come since and haven't matched that level of gameplay. So it's essentially, it's going to be the same concept, right? When Baldur's Gate 3 comes out. And hopefully, and I'm being hopeful here, you know, the game launches without issue. Now, I know it's going to happen because there's millions upon millions of people waiting for this game to drop officially, right? The entire game. So it's the servers, they never can and they never will be able to keep up with the demand of 30 million plus people trying to download from the same spot at the same time. Now, they could spread it globally, and even then, it's still a difficult task to manage. So aside from launch, it's going to be a challenge of trying to download the entire game, which is why I hope that they do a pre-release download. But that's going to be the biggest gripe. And there's going to be good bugs that come with the game. There always will. It's impossible to make a perfect game that works on every machine across the globe. There's just too many factors to think about. But I'm looking forward to it, man. And it's soon, right? It's less than 5 days, 6 days from the point of recording. So it's close.
Yeah, actually, I just noticed. I pulled up the calendar real quick as you were mentioning that. It's coming out on a Thursday. So I guess they're really anticipating full release since they're doing the worldwide version for everyone to have it Friday for the time they go home.
Oh, that's fair. I honestly thought the third was a Friday. Yeah, you're right. It is coming out on Thursday. So maybe they are giving the devs Friday off then. Never mind. I take my statement I said earlier back. Yeah, that, you know what? Good on them. That's why it's ending on Thursday, 5:00 p.m. for them, because now they get to go home, enjoy the game in full, and they get the 3-day weekend. Good job, Larian. Yo, Larian Studios is where it's at, man. I'm telling you. I feel like they do no wrong. They're doing everything right. The only thing I would say that they do wrong is the CEO or whoever runs the streams and the updates, he does it in full paladin armor. And it's just one of those things that I'm like, why, man? Why? But outside of that, Larian Studios, I applaud them. They did such a good job throughout the entire process. So I guess the next time we record, we can actually give our 2 cents on what we think of the final product. Granted, we'll only be in the beginning stages of the game, but we can at least discuss how, you know, getting it set up, installing the full game, setting up multiplayer with the servers being as crazy as they're going to be, and all that that comes with any new launch title.
So we're going to play while we record? Is that what you're telling me?
I'm all for it, man. I mean, maybe it's time we start doing some YouTube streams and just, you know, take the sound bits and upload it to Spotify.
You know, Twitch added some co-stream thing that I think we can have both our faces in it pretty seamless, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm. That's something to look into. But yeah, it's going to be great. All right, I'm going to switch over to a new topic. I think you might have brought this up, but Final Fantasy 14 has been announced to release on Xbox, which is great. I'm all for it.
Which is great. Were you excited to play that at all? You know, it's an MMO, right?
Yeah. No, it's the World of Warcraft, but Final Fantasy. I'm fully aware. I played Final Fantasy 14. I just never figured out how to get out of the tutorial area.
Crying. Okay.
But it wasn't necessarily because the game was bad. The game is just difficult. There is a steep steep learning curve with this game. I couldn't figure out. And I know they updated the experience for beginners a lot since I've played this game. So it might be time to dive back into it. And if it's on the Xbox, I don't know how I feel about an MMO. I've always said I've wanted World of Warcraft on an Xbox, but there's just so many inputs to worry about that I feel like keyboard and mouse will be superior. But I don't know if Final Fantasy has that same level of requirement to play the game. I don't know if you have to manage that, how it compares to the managing of your resources in World of Warcraft, how that compares to Final Fantasy. I don't know if the numbers are the same, close, less, more. I have no idea. But if it's less than World of Warcraft currently is, then I feel like it's a perfect system to put it on. Because you know you're limited by how many inputs you can put on an Xbox controller versus a keyboard and mouse.
Right. And yeah, that's actually pretty major news. So the Final Fantasy releases on Xbox have been extremely weird. So they started with 13. I think that was really the first one to come over.
Yeah, because that's the only one I've ever played.
And then after, I want to say we got some re-releases for 10 and 10.2. Then 14 went to Windows and PS5. 15 we got. And then 16 is now a PS5 exclusive. But yeah, so with that, actually pretty interesting that you say that because... I'm going to butcher this. Naoki Yoshida, also known as Yoshi P, he ended up welcoming Phil Spencer onto the stage alongside the Square Enix CEO, Takashi Kiryu, to celebrate that particular announcement. And then the CEO also went ahead to say, they wanted to welcome the Xbox community to Final Fantasy XIV, and that whenever possible moving forward, they are planning to bring their games to Xbox as well. So it looks like whatever happened recently with Final Fantasy XVI, I think there's much more bad light that they got because, you know, with the Microsoft Activision acquisition, it came into light that Xbox actually was very, very strongly leaning to acquiring Square. There's no record of why it didn't go through, but with the release of the Sony records saying that they actively pursued, extra funding to ensure that Final Fantasy XVI didn't come out on Xbox. I think putting Square Enix in that bad light, I mean, the Japanese are known to be very, very proud. So I think that that negative connotation might have actually pushed Square Enix towards being more multi-platform than they have been previously.
Sure. Yeah, I can see something like that happening on the back end. And it's just that side of the world fascinates me because whatever Sony did to force them to lock in Final Fantasy 16 to PlayStation only, like usually, I mean, for a while, it's just been timed exclusive. And now they're going back to their Final Fantasy roots, which is unfortunate. I see what you're saying. Square Enix has screwed over anyone not on PlayStation. So to stay on the good graces of, the other teams, they went ahead and threw this bone towards us. But I'm curious to see if, because Final Fantasy 14 requires a monthly subscription to play. I'm wondering if they're going to ever do a thing where if you have Xbox Game Pass, that covers you if you play this game through the Xbox.
That is interesting. I honestly don't think so.
They haven't said anything of the such. I'm just bringing up a point that it'd be nice if something like that were to happen. It's just something to think about. Final Fantasy 14 does require a monthly subscription to play. Usually there's a tutorial, not a tutorial, but a test trial time that you can play the game. But it's just one of those things, Xbox runs on subscriptions. They love subscriptions. And this is another subscription-based game. It'd be pretty cool if they did some kind of like, oh, we'll cover you if you have an Xbox Game Pass subscription, or, you know, like the Ultimate. It's just another reason to get that kind of thing.
Right, right. Especially, you know, we mentioned it in last episode where Xbox is now moving into tiers as well. Mm-hmm. Very similar to what Sony did a couple months ago, or like last year.
Right. So yeah, it's curious to see. So it's just one of those games I'm probably gonna, you know, wind back up, give it another shot, because I did enjoy it. It was just I could not figure out how to get past the starting area.
That's
100% a me thing.
I just saw, I think on Steam, or maybe just the Square Enix website, I saw that Final Fantasy 14 was like for like $10 or something like that. I don't know if it's still active, but
just for the base game. Yeah, that's something to keep in mind. Yeah, because just like WoW, a new version of it comes out every couple of years, and then you just have to buy the upgrade essentially to gain access to the new area, new bosses, and the new story. So it's a great game. It looks great from the bits that I've seen. I wasn't smart enough to get past the training grounds.
You know, no fool, bro. The same thing happened to me with Desert Black Online, Black Desert Online, one of the whatever title is. I was super dumb in that game. I couldn't figure it out either.
That's another beautiful game that just has a steep learning curve. And I'm right there with you. I played the beginning and I'm like, this game is gorgeous. I'm enjoying all of it, except I don't know what I'm doing. It's just one of those things that I guess if you can get past that hurdle, you can just enjoy it. Because I'm sure Final Fantasy 14 has so much to offer. It looks fantastic. I wish that I was smarter to be able to just get past that starting area. And just touching on Final Fantasy 14, it looks like they're also releasing some kind of in-game mini game that, you know, with the character that you make, and it feels like Fall Guys. So it's essentially some obstacle course that you have to get through, and you're racing other people around you, and then the obstacles are trying to kill you.
It's actually really funny you mentioned that. I saw something separate. I wasn't even going to bring it up. But in Final Fantasy X, the protagonist, Tidus, he was a Blitzball champion in his time, which is basically like kind of like a handball soccer kind of deal, right? And apparently Yoshi P, the creative director, was being asked about it so much, he like very sternly said, "It's not Blitzball. Stop asking."
That's great. That's fantastic.
Not entirely video game related, but Invincible actually just got the release date for their season 2. That's set to be November 3rd, 2023, which actually helps me segue that Castlevania, which is a game, is getting another, I don't know if it's like arc or a season. There's another Castlevania show coming out, and the teaser trailer just dropped a couple days ago. And if you haven't had a chance, the Castlevania show was really, really good.
Yeah, you bring it up every chance that you get for me to get into it. I might just have to at some point. Just to check it out.
It's just the animation was great. It was phenomenal. Like you know, we just talk about it so much that there are so many video game mediums that try to transition to movies or TV shows, and they are generally not well at all. We started getting lucky around the Sonic era. Like the Sonic movies were enjoyable. Mm-hmm. For those who enjoy One Piece, you're getting the One Piece live action. Because I know the Fullmetal Alchemist was not good. The Bleach one was not good. The Rurouni Kenshin movies were
It wasn't okay. Terrible.
Which one?
FMA. Full Metal.
Nah, it definitely was.
It wasn't. I don't know. I think they did an okay job for an anime to live action. Because I mean, what do we have to compare it to? Dragon Ball tried it, right?
I'm gonna give you my biggest gripe. Okay, so for the most part, a lot of these animes that we have watched, they're primarily based in Japan, right? Mm-hmm. So when the live action comes out, they they try to use the Japanese characters. And I feel for Full Metal, especially, it's like the one chance they should have tried using some more Eurocentric actors for it. Even if it, I think they could have worked it into a dub, to be honest. But I know they ran into like their own issues. Primarily, they used most of their budget on Al, which in the first movie looked, I'm trying to remember which one it was either the first or the second, where he looked amazing. I was like, this is great. I love this. I love it. I want some more of it. And then the second one did not sit with me at all.
Really? I'm not saying that these were masterpieces. I'm just saying that I don't think they were as... It hit the bar, which is Avatar Last Airbender. I don't think any of them has hit the ground that hard. But I'm trying to think if there's one that I saw that was just incredibly fantastic. But I don't know. Maybe there isn't one. Maybe One Piece is going to be the one to break that trend.
Honestly, that's what they're leaning for. Like, I think an easier one to do, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, I honestly think Hunter Hunter would be pretty easily adaptable.
Hunter Hunter wouldn't be bad, but I'm glad you said, and I just remember, there is an amazing anime that did live action, and they did a really good job, and that is the Pokemon live action. I think they did a fantastic job with it. How can we forget about such a good...
Detective Pikachu?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, 100%. That was...
They did it. They were able to take, but it's like you said, it had nothing to do with being so Asian centric. So maybe that's kind of weird to think about, because these are animes and they are kind of designed, with that in mind. So that's an interesting thing to kind of dive into a little bit.
It was only for Full Metal. Like, the other ones made sense to keep the Japanese actors, right? Because that's where they were being adapted from. But ultimately, especially if you take into account the movies, Amestris is just another universe for Germany,
right?
And again, just the one movie, I feel like they could have went more Eurocentric with it. But that's just my gripe with it, because I feel like with that they could have just adjusted, tweaked a couple things with the dialogue and the special effects. Because the special effects, it was weird. It kind of reminded me of Captain America, the first Avenger, right? The first Captain America movie, where overall the special effects of the film were phenomenal, considering it was early budget Marvel. But there's this one scene where he zipline off a train, and it looks like it was done in some dude's backyard with like with like a Casio camera or something. It was just so blatantly obvious, and it ruined that whole movie for me.
I hear you. There's a few scenes like that what's his name, Liam Neeson.
Okay.
Neeson. Yeah. That same thing. It's just... It's just small scenes, that quick action scenes that are just completely butchered. And there's a few, you can go on YouTube and see a lot of that people just nitpick and tear apart. And it's funny. You look at it and you're like, this was incredible. Like, how did this pass through production? So that just reminded me of that.
You know, it's one of my favorite ones is Black Widow, when she's in the chair getting tortured or something. And she like gets punch in the face or kick, and the scene switches and she's like getting her head knocked back, and you can clearly see it's like some 280 pound dude in a wig, and even that did not ruin it for me. Like, that was just okay, whatever. But that Captain America one, just I don't know, it just set me off for some reason.
That's funny. That's comical. Yeah, if you go, there's people that dedicate their lives to analyzing these movies frame by frame to catch these little tidbits. So that's always going to be out there. Just going to push forward on an announcement that was made, and we put out a tweet about it. There's going to be, rumor has it that there's going to be a Pokemon Presents sometime in August. So I'm very curious to see what that's going to be about. I know there's a DLC lined up for the Scarlet and Violet games. That's all I can think of that they'll cover. Maybe there's something going on with Pokemon United, a new Pokemon joining the ranks. But I feel like there's nothing in the pipeline, at least for the next couple months, for Pokemon, for them to have a Pokemon Presents.
I actually kind of wish I would still jump back into Scarlet and Violet with that DLC, but I actually think I'm going to skip this one. I did it with Sword and Shield. Sword and Shield, ultimately, I think, felt like a much better game. If they would have kept that animation style with Scarlet and Violet, I think I would have enjoyed it more. Like, I enjoyed the Dynamax more than the Terraform, but I know the Terraform, for those really, really grindy people, was definitely the move to go, right? So I think that was much more for their hardcore fans. Mm-hmm. But yeah, as much as I love the Area Zero, the music in Area Zero still gives me chills of how amazing it is. But I think I am going to skip the DLC. But excited to see what they're going to bring with that Pokemon Presents, especially with that potential leak that we discussed last week.
Yeah, it's just one of those things where I feel like they're just doing, I don't know, too much at this point. There's just so much going on, and there's just so much Pokemon in general, right? They have Pokemon Go that's ongoing, Pokemon Unite. Now they're MOBA, keeping up with Pokemon Scarlet and Violet. And now we talked about it last time, that Pokemon Sleep thing. I just feel like there's just too much. Never thought I'd say there's too much Pokemon, but there's too much Pokemon. And I feel like it just makes you wonder why. I feel like they should slow down and space things out to keep things exciting and fresh. But it's their company. They're still raking billions, and I'm not. So clearly they know what they're doing. But yeah, just want to announce it's rumored to probably take place August 8th. More will be announced as we get closer. I'm sure, because there's no reason why Nintendo would just have a Pokemon Presents without announcing it ahead of time for people to actually make time to go ahead and log in and watch it on whatever platform they're going to push it through. But just want to make people aware that is happening.
Nice. I don't have much, but there are just a couple games I want to bring to you guys' attention. We have Exoprimal, just came out a couple weeks ago. It's like a Monster Hunter thing in robot suits that looks like it'll just be fun with friends. Definitely not something to play by yourself. It definitely looks more like a team game. We have Remnant 2. And then we have the One Piece Odyssey game in January. Persona 3 Portable. Tortuga apparently is getting a game in January as well. Tortuga Pirate Tale, supposed to be a turn-based pirate strategy game.
So they put everything into it that I hate in gaming. Cool.
And then Kerbal Space Program in February, just to not go too far. But yeah, just a couple things for you guys to keep an eye out. I honestly do not have any. Oh, actually, I have one quick thing, which I think is great. Not really video game itself related, more for companies. So since companies make our games, I feel it's relevant. So there's actually a new SEC regulations that are set to force any public games company in the US to disclose material hacks within 4 days. Right. So harm to a company's reputation, customer or vendor relationships, or competitiveness may be examples of material impact. And this is actually coming from a Roblox data breach that happened back in 2020 and apparently didn't really come to light till like 2021. But the leak was apparently reposted a couple of days ago on July 18th. So it looks like the U.S. Security and Exchanges Commission thinks that it should be much more prominent and much more consumer facing. So they're essentially forcing these companies. So the moment that the breach is noted, right? Because breaches can go unnoticed for quite some time. Sure. But as soon as it's known, they have 4 days to disclose it.
I mean, I think it's a great rule. I'm just surprised that it's coming from the SEC. I might be mistaken. If anyone knows, please feel free to correct me. But I thought this was a purview for the FTC, our Federal Trade Commission. I thought that kind of stuff fell under their umbrella. But I mean, I'm all for it because I think it makes perfect sense for a company to basically have these things publicized. It is embarrassing, right? You never want to be the company saying that you got hacked, that you know somebody gained access to private information, private data, whatever. It's an embarrassing thing to go through, and I 100% get that. But it is the consumer's private information and private data that is being collected, and I feel like they have a right to be made aware and know about it. And I think the SEC, since they're the one that pushed this out, should take it a step further of announcing it for within 4 days, that they should make it mandatory to send an email to each and every person that was affected by this breach. Or even if you weren't affected, if it happens to Microsoft, for example, on the Xbox, if whatever your Xbox email is attached to gets an email saying that, you know, they were hacked within 4 days, I feel like they should take it a step further and force them to not only announce it, but to individually update all people affected by that. I think that's really good. So, but that's pretty cool. I'm just still very confused that the SEC is doing it because they're supposed to just handle the money side of things and the fishiness that corporations do with money. So I don't know what they're doing in the cybersecurity thing, but
that's gonna be a first here. But you know, sure. I'm here, yo. I mean, I hear you on that. All right, I don't know if you have anything else.
I have one last thing, and I'm kind of excited about it. I think we're finally approaching the era within the next gen. No longer going to be called next gen, and next gen becoming just current gen. And what I'm talking about is PlayStation 5, Xbox Series X and S, solely because the other day Microsoft have just updated the dashboard for Xbox Series X and S. And it just reminded me of when that happened between the Xbox 360 and the Xbox One, when the update of the dashboard was the first sign that we were moving away from the previous generation and that new things were about to be received. And I think we're seeing the same thing happening here with the Xbox Series X and S receiving a new dashboard that the Xbox One, oh my God, their naming convention is just atrocious. The Xbox One would not be receiving, which is the previous generation, which I'm excited for. I've been saying it for a long time now. It's time that we just stop dragging the previous gen along for the ride with all these games, because it's making it difficult for these developers to release games because they have to manage so many generations of standards and just the limits that those consoles have on the type of production that they can complete. So ceasing previous generation is going to make for better games to come out, since they can only focus now on current gen. And I'm here for it. So it's about time. So it looks like that is the wave that is coming. And again, that's just solely because of the new dashboard that Xbox Series X and S are receiving and not the Xbox One. If the Xbox One ends up getting it, then I'll just eat my words, because Microsoft wants to keep dragging that generation for longer than they should. And I think that is all I have.
All right, nice. All right, well, yeah, that's going to be it for me. Like Tortuga mentioned earlier, you will be hearing a lot of Baldur's Gate news moving forward. Funny moments, just us being too involved in the game any chance we get. Like, this honestly makes me see if I could scrounge a Bunny First Steam Deck just to play any chance I get.
I wasn't even considering getting a Steam Deck or Aces, the Ally. Bro. Boy, did you just put an idea in my head that I do not wish I had. Oh my God. That's a point. That's a huge selling point. To be able to play Baldur's Gate on the go like that. Oh man, I didn't even consider. I would just,
I'm sorry, in advance.
Oh wow, that's, you know what, Fair point. Yeah, it's Baldur's Gate 3 is going to be so great. I think, yeah, like you said, we'll bring it in. We'll try to do some gameplay captures and have it uploaded. I know we've uploaded some individual content over on YouTube. It'd be cool to continue doing that. We can start doing that with Baldur's Gate 3 just because it's going to be the game of the year, at least in our books, to finish out the year. And this is, and Starfield's coming out 30 days later. So right. it's like, yeah, just so much. So, and it's not overwhelming, but it is over. Like, it's a good type of overwhelming, in the game. 'Cause this rarely happens where a lot of good games come out at the same time. Rarely happens.
Apologies in advance to your finances. Actually funny. So we're getting Baldur's Gate on August 3rd because we have it on PC, but the PS5 release isn't actually until September 6th, which is the same day as the Starfield release. So both games are actually coming on the same day.
That is true. That's a fair point. And just an honorary mention, the Xbox Series X and S are going to get the game, but they just haven't announced when yet, just because they haven't poured in enough development into that platform to, you know, release a stable game. But once they're done with PC and once they're done with PlayStation, I'm sure they'll divert a lot of their team or the Xbox, and then that game will come out soon after. But still, yeah, I don't play that many games on the console, except for like Elden Ring is like the only one that I've played on console for the longest time. So it's just, it's easy to forget about that that's out there. But honorary mention, it's a good point. Glad you brought it up.
All right, man. Well, take us out.
You got it. All right. So thanks all of you for hanging out with us yet another week. If you want to support this podcast, don't forget you could check our links in the description below to check out all of our other content in other locations. Remember, if you enjoy this podcast, best way to support us is to share the podcast with anyone you think would enjoy this podcast. You can always reach out to us via Twitter at @2guys1level. Let us know what you thought of this episode, any previous episodes, and what you would like for us to discuss in any future episodes. Again, thank you all for hanging out with us, and we will catch you all next time. Until then.